Are you looking for ways to create deep bonds within your community? Would you like to have a unique capstone experience that will provide lifelong memories? Have you ever thought of traveling with your community? Today, we have a special guest to talk all about planning, executing, and enjoying travel with your community. You will hear about all the benefits that can come from this experience. We cannot wait to share this with you.
Hello, and thanks for joining She Leads by Faith podcast. We are the homeschool community builders. I'm Pam Kafer, along with Molly Kitzmiller and Hannah Larson, and we are here helping homeschool leaders grow lasting community built on Christ, connection, and strong leadership.
Are you or your kids feeling isolated and discouraged, even though you're in a homeschool group or co-op? Or are you homeschooling by yourself and desire a like-minded Christian community? Is the Holy Spirit prompting you to build an authentic community for your family? There are families waiting for you to answer the call. We know that the thought of starting your own group that truly meets your needs can be overwhelming. You are not alone. We are here to come alongside you.
We are three homeschool moms and co-op leaders with over 30 years of experience between us, leading thriving homeschool groups. We have answered the call to obediently step out in faith and trust God's plan. We have learned many lessons along the way, and we want to help you have a smooth journey so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. If you're ready for lasting community built on Christ, connection, and servant leadership, this podcast is for you. Pop in your earbuds, keep your notebook handy, and be encouraged. You can do this. We are here for you.
Hey friends, Pam here with Molly and Hannah. In today's episode, we're talking with our very own trip planning guru, our friend Jennifer Hopwood. Drum roll, please.
Woohoo! Woohoo!
Jennifer has planned multiple high school trips and is now a project leader with Adventures and Missions. And we, not on top of that, she is one of my very best friends in the entire world and has led with me the longest of all of them. And we are so happy to have her here today. She's going to talk a little bit about how to plan a community trip, and in particular, a high school trip. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so happy to have you.
So, Jennifer, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. I am finishing my 20th year of homeschooling, which is hard to believe. Been around the block a lot of times. And I have led with Pam, a homeschool support group for moms, for about 5 years. And then I just stepped down. Well, several years ago, I stepped down just feeling like God was going to call me into something else. And one day I said, why don't we start an academic co-op in our area? And Pam said, I think we should do that. And so we did a lot of planning and got that off the ground. And I've also planned a lot of field trips over the last 20 years. I had a daughter that learned by hands-on learning. So that gave me the boost to set up a lot of field trips, which helped train me up for leading a trip. And we've also planned a couple of different homeschool retreats for moms. And that also has played into trip planning. So I'm ready for anything you would like to ask.
All right. Yeah, we have lots of questions for you.
That's awesome. Jennifer, thanks for joining us. And I'm excited to pick your brain so that we can learn from you. Because not all of us are, I'm guessing, as organized and in the know as you are. So the first question is, what kind of trips do you plan? What do you like to plan?
All right. So I like to plan two different kinds of trips. My first trip that I like to plan is mission trips. And so when we started our co-op, we had decided, what if we did a mission trip 1 year, every other year, and then a educational trip every other year. So mission trips are super fun, easy to plan, and very affordable. We went on a trip with Ames, Adventures and Missions, and it was really a great way to start if you're going to want to plan a trip. The other trips that I absolutely love are education trips. They're a little bit more work to plan. It's like 20 different field trips in a week put together. They're so fun. We have done U.S. government trips, a trip. We've done a marine biology trip, and I would love to do like an adventure trip of your state. So I live in Colorado, so like a Colorado adventure trip and learn about where you live. Not a history trip, that would be a boring one, but like an adventure one. So
it depends on who you ask if the history trip would be a boring trip.
That's true. That's true. Jennifer, so, what's been your favorite trip that you've planned and why?
Oh, that's a hard question. I honestly don't know that I could answer that question. Each trip I've come back with like a memory that I'll never forget. And so there's been highlights on each and every one that are so special, but are just so specific to that trip that you can't duplicate unless you're there.
What's one of them?
Well, our first trip that I planned was a marine biology trip down to Clearwater. And that was a super, super special trip because it was our first trip. And you know, when you just don't know what you're doing, just God shows up and it just works somehow. what I loved about that trip was we all stayed in one big house and we all figured out how to, well, it organized a meal plan and everybody had to take turns cooking, and just the like living together for a week was really a cool thing.
The camaraderie, I bet, and the bonding that happens.
So fun. That's, so fun. I mean, imagine hanging out with your friends for a whole week.
Yeah.
And then getting to walk across the street. One of my favorite parts of that one was that every night we would play volleyball on the beach at Clearwater in the talcum powder sand. It was like so fun. That was one of my highlights. Another one of my highlights from one of our trips that we went on was the mission trip when we went to
Hilton Head,
South Carolina. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't think of that being a place to go on a mission because it's kind of a vacation spot. But the thing that I loved the most was that Adventures and Missions has such a great setup to build your spiritual foundation while you're there on a trip, because you could do a lot of the different things at home. But one of our students got saved on that trip. And that was like one of my absolute favorite memories of going on a trip. You just never know the memories that you're going to create.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So Jennifer, have you done just high school trips? And if so, what has led to that?
Okay, great question. I have done just high school trips and I love just high school trips. This question comes up every year when I plan a trip, is why can't the whole family come and why are we splitting families and why are only two or three of the family going and the rest are staying behind? And I get it. It's tough until you're there with your high schooler, until they're teenagers and they're getting ready to launch. They've got 4 short years left. And they are working on independent. It's like almost a rite of passage. And they are, so it's a rite of passage for them. And because they're becoming more and more independent as they go, it gives the parents also time to just sit back and relax and enjoy having fun with that child. Mm-hmm. And so that's my favorite part about trips and high school trips. I have planned a couple of shorter camping trips for the whole family. And so we'll go for two nights, and go camping for the whole family, because I got such pushback for why just high schoolers. So I created another trip for the families and it's a whole different experience. Super fun. And parents are so busy and so focused on their younger ones that the high schoolers are on their own and they just almost get forgotten about because they're independent. And so it's just not the same for them.
That's really good thing to think about, because we are in the middle of kind of planning a trip right now. And that is the big question for sure.
Always the big question. And I get it. I get like, why am I spending this much thousands of dollars and only half my family gets to go?
Yeah.
And I tell you, if you do it, you will not regret it. Not one person on that trip will ever regret it.
Good. Yeah. Good to know.
Because not only do the kids get connected more, the parents do too. And they get to spend time with their kid in a way that they don't often get to, especially if they have multiple kids in their family.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So is there an ideal group size? What would you say the ideal group size is?
You know, I don't know the answer really to that question. Every trip that I've planned has been somewhere between 20 and 30 people, maybe 60% students and 40% adults. And so, and this year is, again, it's, we're pushing close to the 30 number, but it's still going to be great. I think if you had more than that, it would just take some extra planning and maybe offering two or three different activities at the exact same time and letting people pick. And so that you have smaller groups throughout the day a couple of times, that might help build more close relationships. So mm-hmm. far, ours have been that size and it's worked out really well.
And then are people required to go on all of the activities when you make those activities available to them?
So there's another thing. If you're not asking about the high schoolers, why just the high schoolers? When you get there, you're going to be like, does my kid have to do everything? Generally, I say, yes, the kid does have to do everything. Because otherwise, it's like herding cats, right? And so everybody's mm-hmm. going to be like, oh, but I'm going to go over here. And then, oh, my friend wants to come too. And you've lost complete control. There is always and forever somebody who's maybe sick or hurt or really just not feeling it. And so then the parent or the chaperone can stay behind with that student, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done is every high school student does need a chaperone. And so I personally never want to like be responsible for 5 or 10 high school students by myself. That does not sound fun to me. And so, but if you have a family that just wants to send their student, we've had that every year, several students go just without their parents. And then all I do is ask that student to find a chaperone that's willing to be step in and be their parent, because the leader of the trip has a lot going on. And so if you're not focusing on flights and the flight numbers and the place where you're staying and all of that, or the food and who's eating where and when, or the education and make sure that this place is open still and contacting them, I don't want to be in charge of another person's child.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything official that you have, like them sign some kind of a parent permission ahead of time?
Probably should have not yet, because by the time we go on our trips at the end of the school year, so even if you have a new family new to that community in August, by May or June, when you go on that trip, they're very well bonded and connected to everybody. And so you're kind of one big, well, community, right? Doing life together. And so by the time you go on the trip, it's just an understanding. It's like one big friend group. It's super fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking for legal reasons, if there was any kind of thing that you might want to have, like, oh, I give this parent medical permission if anything happened, or I don't know, something like that.
Probably a good form to add in on my trip. Yeah.
And I think most of the time then it's between those two families. It's less about our community creating that form for them, but it's more between those two families. Like, that's that understanding that they're responsible for their kids.
Yeah. So Jennifer, tell us about the adults and their jobs. So some will be chaperones. Do you have adults do other things as well? Like, are they helping to lead certain activities? What are they doing for you? How is everybody working in collaboration together to make this trip happen?
Yep. Great question. So I've always had several parents come to me and say, how can I help? What can I do? And you'll be surprised at how many families are just appreciative that there's a trip being planned that they can go on and enjoy and do nothing. And that's okay too. And so on the trips where we've had to rent big vans to take people around in, like Clearwater, for instance, then I've had several parents that volunteer to drive the van. That's super helpful. I assign generally somebody, usually it's somebody who's come a parent that's been in the military. They like structure and they like to be on time. And I put them in charge of getting us out the door on time so that we make it to the field trip on time. That's very helpful. Then if we're like staying at a place where we're doing our own meals, then even though I will have the meal plan already done, each meal, I'll put one parent in charge of. So I don't have to be in the kitchen, but I'll be able to turn it all over to them.
And on top of that, the kids are expected to participate too. They all rotate through with cleaning and cooking and everything. So it's not the parents that are doing the work. The kids are responsible as well.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I think that's really important to have the kids invested in it too.
For sure.
What's the ratio that you have for chaperones to students typically?
Typically, it's somewhere like 1-to-1. Usually the parents are just as excited as the student to go on the trip. And sometimes, like, my husband will go as well. We led a trip. We did a a U.S. history trip, a government trip. Mm-hmm. And so that was walking around big cities. And so my husband was in the military and was very helpful to have him there because he was truly just the person that got us from point A to point B, which became a huge job. And so sometimes two parents will go with one student. Sometimes somebody will just send only their student. Generally, some families have one parent and have two or three high school students. And so it'll be mm-hmm. one parent to two or three. So it kind of varies in there, but in per family, usually each family has one chaperone that goes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how do you decide where to go? Because it seems to me like the list is endless, right? We're looking at a U.S. history trip and you think about D.C. first. But there's all kinds of places you could go. So how do you decide?
And so you're right, there is so many. And so I like to have my trips be education trips, right? Mm-hmm. And so jumping off of social studies. So then you've got your U.S. history, you've got your state history, right? Because like mm-hmm. we have the Colorado history class. I'm swimming up a river or down a river the wrong way. I don't know. I like marine biology in there. I feel like the world is covered in 75% ocean, even though we're landlocked in Colorado. I feel like being able to go and learn about the ocean and everything in it. And then that provides for a super fun beach trip as well. But by the time the kids get there, it's a beach and it's super fun. But we work with an educating aquarium down there. Clearwater Beach Aquarium. And the kids are so engaged in the learning because they've been learning out of a book for so long. To be able to have everything come to life is amazing. And same mm-hmm. thing with U.S. history or government. I think it doesn't matter where you pick, as long as that's your jumping point, then it becomes affordability.
Yeah.
So which is the affordability? Where can we make it happen? Like, where's the lodging at? Which one fits us? And mm-hmm. it can take a long time figuring that piece out, especially for your first time.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm. We sat and did that on that. We hung out on that question for probably 2 months, several of us talking about it all the time.
And you want to balance when you're thinking about where to go, you want to balance that travel time too, because you don't want to be spending a lot of time traveling on the both ends going and coming. Because last year we were voting on whether or not we should go to Hawaii to do a mission trip. And we voted against it because of the travel time that it would take there, the short amount of time that you wouldn't be having a vacation. You'd probably just be sad that you went to Hawaii and you worked and you didn't really have a vacation.
Yeah.
So that's why we settled on South Carolina.
True. And the time change as well. And so we've only done domestic trips, although I would love to do an international mission trip in Central America or the Bahamas. But because of COVID, it just put the kibosh on it. But everything's open back up now. And so being able to pull that off would be amazing someday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have another question to add in here. You talked about spending a lot of time wrestling with where to go. When do you usually start your planning process? How long does it take? And are you planning like a year in advance? Or tell us a little bit more about timing.
Well, I might be unusual, but I love to plan. It's actually a hobby of mine. Sometimes I dream about it at night. So I could really be planning and thinking about organizing trips years out, like laying them out, like what if we do this and then that. But if you were like, all right, so our first year we tossed and turned like where to go, and that took a while. By the time we pulled the trigger, so for us to pull the trigger for the kids, for our group, something about getting on an airplane made it a special trip,
mm-hmm.
and versus driving somewhere. And mm-hmm. and I think if we went and pulled the trigger to drive somewhere, they would overcome that hurdle. But for them, and a lot of them had never been on an airplane. So to be able to fly was a big deal. And so I would plan a lot. And then you have to have the buy-in of people going, all right, we'll jump on your bandwagon and trust you to do this. And when you buy the plane tickets, actually, I did that today for our trip. But when you buy the plane tickets, that's the, like, you've pulled the trigger. Here's where you are and you're going. And so it's somewhere between 6 and 9 months, I would say, when the community knows, here's where I'm going. Let's start fundraising. And here's my plane ticket. It's bought. I'm doing this.
And then when you are in that process of deciding, how do you actually do that process? Like, do you have meetings and things like that to talk about where you're going to go? Or what's the logistics behind how you decide?
Well, I really do dream about it at night. I do a lot of praying about it, talking to Jesus about, like, what does this trip look like for these families? Because you got to put your mind in the students' minds and have see the world through their eyes and what that is going to look like, because that's going to look different than it through my eyes. And so that part, there's a lot of that before any, believe it or not, I'm an introvert. So there's a lot of that happening in my mind before I ever have a conversation. And then you're going to have a conversation with the other leaders in your group and figure out the best fit and pick the trip and then let the group know.
And then you have a meeting with the families or the high schoolers, or after that, then what do you do?
Yep. Before you have a meeting with the group, you're going to have a general gist of cost, of like how much the airplane tickets are going to cost, where you're staying, what kind of lodging, because we've done lodging at a VRBO, a big house, right? We've done lodging in hotel rooms in big cities. We've done lodging where we've slept on air mattresses in a big room in a church. So we've done it all different ways. So you got to know that information, because people are like, what are you doing? Why are we doing this? And so you have to have that information already known. So by the time mm-hmm. you tell the group, I would say about 80% of the trip is already planned.
Yikes.
But you usually have about 2 or 3 options that you provide, and then you allow the community to vote on it, right?
If you want to start like this summer before the school year, if you're really like excited to do it, and then I would start in the summer. And I've done that where you have like, and I love, okay, so I love, oh, this is so fun. I love getting together with the group before we go and tell them about it. So whether if we start with the brainstorming and get the feel and the excitement of the group up in the summer, and then after you pull the plug in, you're going to go. And the mission trip actually really cemented this in. I love getting together once a month as that travel group, because you're starting to bond and it's a different bond than any other bond. And I love sharing a meal together. I love breaking bread. So we did that with the mission trip. We went to Hilton Head. And so then I tried to have dinners that related to where we were going. So we had the shrimp boil. And so just different like Southern foods. So like just to kind of start to entice them and get them interested and introduce them to where they're going.
That's awesome.
And then we had the meeting, and then we basically gave them those 3 options. And then knowing that, because you will be shocked that people will make a decision whether they want to go or not based on if they're sleeping on a mattress on the floor. Usually it's the parents. They're like, I'm not doing that. And
yes,
some of them slept in hotels that time, but they still went on a trip. But at least they have the information to be able to make those decisions.
Yep.
Okay. So you mentioned that you just recently bought airplane tickets. What is the deal with group ticket purchases? Is that a good way to go? How do you find like the best deal?
Okay, so airplane tickets are probably my least fun part of the entire trip, mm-hmm. because there's something about the decision of of that finality of like, we're going, because if we don't go, we're losing money. And you're doing it for 20 to 30 people. Like, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
And so that can just make me panic a little bit. But you become a travel agent, just like for free, a voluntary one. And so what you're going to do is you're going to start calling. And well, so I look up all the different major airlines and find out which airlines go there. And then online, which one, what are the prices like? Which airlines have group travel? Then they have a different phone number. So I call them and talk to the group travel agent there and get a group travel price per airline. And that price can vary $50 to $100 per airline. So generally I pick for sure always the cheapest airline. We have flown on United. United has been super great. United group tickets, if you buy United and fly United, you have to buy those tickets that day and pay for them in full.
Wow.
Southwest has a great deal where when you commit and buy their tickets, it's $50 a person. And the full rest of the full ticket price is not due until about 6 weeks before you leave.
And they guarantee the price for you.
And they guarantee the price. Not only do they guarantee the price, but if the price drops, it's up to you to call. So I call every week from here for the next 8 months and see if that price drops, and they'll lower that price for you per ticket. And wow. It's not even a credit to the person. It's just the price in general drops because you haven't paid anything. So I really like Southwest for that.
And then what happens if somebody at the last minute can't go or something like that, they get sick or something?
Yep. So every year we've had somebody that can't go the last minute and get sick, and or a family has decided it's just not for them and they're going to back out. And so with Southwest, thankfully we were Southwest when that happened. So I bought the number of tickets for the people that are going, but I did not put the names on those tickets until about 2 months out. So Right before I put those names on, I contact all the families. Are you 100% sure? Because once your name goes on here, it's hard to change it. And so at that point, the family said, no, thank you. We actually don't want that. And another family stepped in. It was really cool, actually. And it's like, hey, my husband and the little kids want to go, so we'll take their tickets and they're going to go on their own trip. So they were on the plane with us, which they were very respectful and letting the high schoolers be the high schoolers and stuff. And then, but it was so great that they took those plane tickets, so that family wasn't out that money.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, most of the airlines have a 10% drop. So if you've purchased 20 tickets, you can drop two of those tickets.
Now, are the prices generally better for group tickets than if you go and look for them on your own?
And so they are. And so there, I found them to be about $50 cheaper per ticket than whether you buy them online on your own. And so that's for sure a plus. This time we kind of struggled with, right now, and a lot of times Costco will have, if you buy a $500 Southwest credit, and it only costs you $450 in the store, but then you're buying your ticket online, but you're not using, and then it's individual, but you're not using all of that credit. And so then each family is going to have little bits of random credit left on Southwest. And so our group this year decided not to do that and to do the group, but there could be a group someday that's like, we're good with the credit. Actually, and can I just say something that's a different thing?
Absolutely.
If you're a group and you're looking forward to doing this and you know you want it in your future, I personally would highly encourage everybody to get their Southwest frequent flyer number, because even though you're on a group, you still can put that number in. So you still get points and credit for flying. And I think that's a good idea. And also if you know, hey, we're going on this trip, we're going to go Southwest. If the families did get the credit card, it would have to happen like a year or so before, then they could build up points. And so then maybe it could be the Costco way and the point way could save your entire group money. And so then you wouldn't do the group travel, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
With
sure.
us at this point, there isn't enough that there's only, you know, a couple here and there that have done that. And so that for us, for our group, the group travel has been the way to go. I feel like if I would back the clock up and do
it all over again, right? You learn as you go. I think I would encourage that for families.
So a year ahead of time, get the Southwest credit card, do the voucher through Costco, and then everybody buys their own tickets on the same flight.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tricky too, right? Because it sounds easy enough to do, but to get the people to buy the actual right ticket on the right plane, I just feel like they're opening it up for anything could happen.
Right. Yeah. The group ticket seems to eliminate some of that difficulty. You know that everybody's going to arrive together. That's huge.
Not only arrive together, but actually buy the plane ticket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And travel together. Yeah.
Right. So you just kind of keep that control, I feel like, if you do the group ticket.
And Jennifer, so what happens if somebody wants to fly on a different time or a different flight or has like points that they want to use?
Yep. And so that's happened too. We've had several families will go on a trip and then that works where you'll do 2 one-way group tickets. So you might like have 20 people flying to the trip, but only 18 people flying back. Because those 2 people are going to stay longer or go somewhere else from there. And that works really well. And we've had people do that every year. As far as I have actually 2 families this time saying, hey, I have the points. I don't want to go on the group. So I've given them the flight info. They've said they've purchased the tickets. And that has actually worked just fine because the day of travel, everybody's on the same plane. It just paid for in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've offered as well, like if there's a family that wants to fly on a cheaper airline, they can, but then they just have to be at the airport where we're going. They have to be landed by a certain amount of time because that's when we leave that airport. And if they're not there, then they're responsible for their ground transportation getting to our lodging because it's not fair to make the whole group wait for 1 or 2 people or families that chose to travel different and get in later, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Total sense.
Mm-hmm. Just a respect.
Yeah. So then how do you choose where to stay between Airbnbs, hotels, VRBOs? How do you figure that out?
Well, price is the driving factor on every decision I make, especially for a group, because spending other people's money is way harder than you ever think that it would ever be. or deciding how they're going to spend their money, that's hard. And so when we've done big cities, the options are hotels, right? There aren't VRBOs in a big city. So we've had to do the hotel route. And even though sometimes on paper, a family staying on hotel, it might look cheaper for lodging versus the VRBO, but the food cost in hotel versus the VRBO is so very, very drastic that if you can obviously do your own food and cook for yourself, it's going to be the cheapest way to go. So it really depends on where you're going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's been your success rate in being able to rent like 12 passenger vans to transport people?
Okay. 12 passenger vans been awesome. Costco is our best friend. You can look at all the companies and compare them, and every single time Costco wins. Just so you know, I think it's a very important safety tip. Pam will tell you, most people's credit cards or car insurance covers car rentals. They do not cover 12 passenger vans. So you do have to pull out the car insurance from Costco or the rental company for those 12 passenger or 15 passenger vans.
Good to know.
It's a good to know. Key fact.
Yeah. It's tricky backing those things up, especially if you're by yourself.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't ever like hit a pole or anything and shatter the back of the window on our very last day of our Boston trip. No. That never happened. But like we said, we make lots of memories,
lifelong memories.
I'll probably be driving in Florida too. They'll still let me because they don't want to be the one to back into something. And I've already done it. So
I'm very grateful for van drivers.
And on that note, how about we close out this episode? We've learned so much about high school trip planning, and there's so much more to learn. So join us next week again with Jennifer Hopwood. We'll see you then.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you found this podcast helpful, applicable, or encouraging in any way, the best way to thank us is to share it with someone who might benefit and to write a review. Here's how to do it from Apple Podcasts. Right now, exit the show you're currently in, then select the library icon on the bottom of the screen. Then select Shows. From there, click on the She Leads by Faith podcast thumbnail. Scroll down until you see Ratings and Review, then click on Write a Review, which is just below. Tell us what you think. We would love to hear how it helped.